Chapter 3. The warships have come. They're reported first over New York and then cities across the world. This is it. I murmur to myself. Everything I've tried to prevent is happening. The Moogs are here, in full force. It's an invasion. Is Sam safe? Noto and I gather around several televisions in the house's media room with at least a dozen feds to watch shocked newscasters and talking heads try to make sense of what's happening. Pretty soon the only thing playing is a live feed of the UN press conference. Ella is there. So is Cetricus Ra. In the form of a middle-aged man, he's saying something about wanting peace. I grind my teeth together. Then there's some sort of commotion, and the camera pans to John, his face a portrait of rage. That's when everything goes straight to hell. Where is Sam? I search for a glimpse of my son. But he's not in the crowds fleeing when John's hands start to glow with fire, and by the time Ra transforms into a horrifying monster, the camera is pointed only at the people on the stage. When the live feeds cut out, the news stations keep playing the footage over and over again. Still, I don't see Sam. I try Sam's phone, but there's no answer. Of course not. He's probably there in the thick of it all, just off camera. My hands start to shake as a feeling of helplessness falls over me. I'm so far away from him. I should have stopped him, demanded that he not go. But it's too late. What can I do now? Suddenly, the idea of going back down into the archives seems foolish, like trying to use a water bottle to put out a forest fire, and so I keep watching the footage on loop. At first, it's just the videos on repeat, with no commentary, as if the news anchors themselves can't figure out how to respond. Then it's a bombardment of theories, warnings, and assurances that either the government will handle this or that it's directly responsible for it. Gamera, still in the form of a small black cat, whines between my legs, brushing up against me. His green eyes dart about, ears perked. I wonder, briefly, how much he understands about what's going on. Can he feel that our enemy has invaded, that everything is changing? Around me, the FBI agents try to deal with what's happening in their own ways. Most are either dumbfounded, standing slack-jawed beside me, or they're manic, yelling at every busy signal or call that won't go through on their phones, or shouting into crackling radios, trying to get a handle on the situation. No one's heard from Walker, and I can tell that several of these agents want to be out in the field. I don't know how many times I watch the footage repeat. Reports start to come in from across the world. Humanity doesn't know how to react. Chinese forces attack the warship over Beijing, sending planes to drop bombs on it from above. At the same time, trucks shoot missiles from below, the sky erupting in flames. But the warship remains unharmed, protected, apparently, by some sort of invisible shielding. The missiles explode against the force field, and then fire and debris rain down on the city. A few of the missiles appear to bounce off the ship completely, obliterating towering buildings, destroying the skyline. When the smoke clears, the warship looks untouched, but Beijing is on fire. There's riots and looting in cities across the world. It seems to be happening in places where there aren't even any warships. I guess when there's a giant alien craft hovering over your city, you're less likely to rampage through the streets. People are scared, frightened, some ready to fight, others claiming it's the end of days. There's even footage of a group holding welcome banners and signs that say, "Beam me up." I tried to remember how I reacted when I found irrefutable proof that there was life outside of Earth when I first met Pittacus Lore. Bursts of images and feelings flash through my mind. Awe, fear, validation. Pittacus holds out a white tablet, his eyes burning like fire as he asks for my help. A new video starts to play on one of the monitors, taking me out of my thoughts. I recognize Sarah Hart's voice immediately as she explains who the Guard and Mogadorians are. After spending so much of my life trying to keep the Guard a secret, it's astounding to hear them spoken of on national television. At first, it's just on one news station. But then all of them are playing it, talking about how it was found on YouTube. They actually interrupt their coverage of the warships to show it, until Sarah's voice is echoing all around me, coming from every speaker and telling the world about John Smith and the Lorik. The talking heads try to dissect the footage, bringing up screen caps and stories from They Walk Among Us. I feel like I can't catch my breath as I look on. Everything is happening, all the dominoes falling. I can barely keep up. Eventually, Agent Noto stands beside me. He doesn't take his eyes off the screen as he speaks. We can stream the news footage on a laptop downstairs if you want to get back to work. I'm aware of that, I say quietly. But what's the point? What are we going to find that can fight this? Outside, the sun is beginning to set. My eyes feel like sandpaper. They're no doubt bloodshot, and the combination of caffeine and the events unfolding on the screen has me practically shaking. Just a suggestion. I can't seem to look away either. He lets out a single, breathy laugh. The world is shitting its pants right now. And we're playing house in a goddamned alien suburb, another agent says, pushing himself between the two of us. What the hell are we doing here, Noto? Following Walker's orders. Noto's voice is calm and measured. Only a hint of annoyance shines through. Walker went to New York. She could be dead for all we know. I see Noto glance at me before turning his attention to the other man. This is a highly valuable enemy base. We can't just... For fuck's sake! This isn't capture the flag! The man is attempting to whisper now, but failing. I can't get anyone on the line! The Moog loyalists must have shut down communications at the branch offices. Either that, or every agent we have is trying to figure out what the hell to do. We're not far from D.C. There are half a dozen assets within a 20-mile radius more important than protecting a bunch of half-trashed Mogadorian shit. Weapons. Civilians. People who know launch codes. And that's just off the top of my head. We can't let all that fall into enemy hands. Despite everything that's happening, or maybe because of the rush of adrenaline and heightened awareness surging through my body, a memory pings in one of the dark spots of my mind. The last thing we need is for that to fall into the enemy's hands. I hear the words again and again. I know it's important, but I can't remember why. Slowly, a scene starts to come to light. I'm on the porch of my home. Sam is with me, but so young and fragile. A woman I don't know is there, warning me about something. What is it? I close my eyes, trying to grab hold of the memory before it's gone. Maybe this is something that can help us. Then I remember, she's telling me that if she found me, then the Moogs will too. That my family isn't safe, and I'm scared. Because I know I can't leave, because the Lorik are planning to come back to Paradise one day. And so I stayed. I swallowed down another wave of nausea. For the last few months I'd assumed that the Moogs had taken me by surprise, but they didn't, not entirely. I knew they could find me. I was warned. But I didn't listen. What if they'd taken my family? What if they'd taken Sam, too? How could I have been so stupid? But then who is the woman I was talking to? She wasn't a greeter or one of the Sepan. But I have the feeling she was Lorik, someone I was equally impressed by and afraid of. Where is she now? What do you think, Malcolm? Noto asks, and it takes me a moment to realize he's talking to me. I'm sorry, I say. My voice is a coarse whisper. What? That's when the Chimerae outside start to go nuts. Bird-like screeches sound from all around, breaking through the cacophony of news reports and arguments inside. Gamera hisses, jumping into my arms. Noto and I look at each other, and then he follows me as I dart for the front door, shouting something about being careful. A few more agents are already on the lawn, one holding a pair of binoculars up to her eyes. In the distance, some kind of aircraft is approaching.
"What have we got?"
Noto asks.
"Looks like a transport chopper."
The agent hands her binoculars to Noto.
"Army markings."
"Do we know who they are?" I ask. Despite the agents helping us out in Ashwood, the government isn't exactly to be trusted right now. I try to remember what I've read on They Walk Among Us, and everything else we've uncovered, hoping to recall exactly who in the army we can trust, if anyone.
"We're on walkie-talkies here, and most of the cell networks are down,"
Noto mutters. "Unless you saw some kind of broadcasting equipment underground, we can't exactly call them up. Stay in the house until we've identified them." He unholsters his sidearm.
"And tell the others in there to prep the big guns."
Gamera lets out a growl. Overhead, the remaining Chimerae continue to dart around in avian forms, squawking.
"I'll be right inside," I say. "If anything goes wrong..."
But I'm not sure how to finish that sentence. Noto just jerks his head towards the door, and without knowing what else to do, I go. When I get inside, I pull open two slats of wooden blinds and watch as the chopper lands on the street in front of the house. Two men dressed in black body armor hop off the helicopter when it lands. The one in front keeps his sidearm holstered, but the FBI agents have their weapons on him, their posture rigid. The other man's got some kind of assault rifle slung across his back and a crew cut. He looks like he's made of nothing but muscle, like a pro wrestler. I can see mouths moving, but can't hear anything over the noise of the helicopter's blades beating. Noto steps forward, holding out what I assume is his badge. He talks to the two men for a bit, and then raises a hand to the agents behind him. They relax slightly. Then Noto turns his face to the window I'm looking out of. The others follow suit, until they're all staring in my direction. "Oh, no," I murmur. The men in body armor follow Noto across the lawn. Gamera hisses, jumping to the ground in front of me.
"Easy there,"
I say softly, watching the men approach.
"I think we're okay."
Once inside the house, Noto introduces the man who seems to be in charge as Colonel Lujan. His handshake is firm and his eyes dark and piercing beneath bushy black eyebrows. The other man goes unnamed, but Briggs is written on a patch over the chest pocket on his uniform. "I'm Malcolm Good," I say. Lujan and his other man just nod as if I'm giving them information they already had. Neither of them moves to sit or enter past the foyer.
"Dr. Good,"
Lujan says.
"I'll cut to the chase. Our country is under siege and facing an alien invasion. The president and several other key members of the administration have been transported to a bunker where they're formulating America's response to this crisis. Your assistance has been requested."
"My assistance?" I ask.
"It seems that Walker's been in touch with the brass,"
Noto says. "They want answers as to what's going on. And she gave them your name, said you could provide a clear picture of the conflict. Apparently she's tied up in New York with, well, you saw what's going on there. My son, did she mention Sam?"
"I haven't spoken to Agent Walker directly," Lujan says. "I'm just here to make sure your collection goes smoothly. As you can imagine, time is a factor here, Dr. Good."
My mind races, wondering if I even have the option of saying no to these men, and there's still the possibility that something from the archives could help, however unlikely that might seem considering the news. On the other hand, I can almost certainly do more good if I have the president's ear and can lay out exactly what's happening. Doing that will help Sam and the others. "If you'll give me a few minutes, I'd like to pack up some of my things from underground. My rifle is down there, along with a lot of intel.
We can arm you,"
Lujan says.
"I can keep things going here,"
Noto says. "If your son or any of the others return..." He pauses.
"Well,
It seems like Walker knows how to get in contact with the bunker. But, with all due respect, sir, the colonel says, we need to move.
I look back and forth between them before nodding. Gamera shifts on the ground between my feet.
My bag and jacket are in the dining room,
I say, darting into the adjoining room before anyone can protest. Gamera follows. I look over my shoulder to make sure the military men aren't watching before unzipping my duffel bag and motioning for him to climb inside.
It's not ideal,
I whisper as he shrinks down into a beetle and hops in.
But it's the best I can do right now.
I pull out an old satellite phone. I keep the new one in my pocket at all times in case Sam calls, before putting on my jacket and slinging the bag over my shoulder, trying to be careful about not knocking Gamera around too much inside. Back in the foyer, I toss the older phone to Noto. It's secure, I say. I'll contact you when I can. Keep looking for anything that might help us. He's interrupted by more screeching outside, followed by shouting. Luhan's walkie-talkie crackles.
5 unknown aircraft coming in fast!
Hold your position!
Luhan shouts into a handset. He turns to me.
We need to get out of here now. If the chopper gets hit, it's a long way back to D.C., and we're sure as hell not getting there on the highway. It's jammed for miles.
Go, Noto says.
Good luck.
I nod. And then I'm running. We're only a few feet out the doorway before I spot the Mogadorian skimmers headed straight for Ashwood. Chapter 4. We're halfway across the lawn when a Humvee crashes through the iron gates leading into the estates. It speeds towards us, eventually turning on a dime and screeching to a halt on the opposite side of a short brick fence separating two lots. Doors open.
I see the pale faces of Mogadorians.
And then suddenly Briggs is pulling me to the ground, shoving me behind one of the FBI vehicles parked on the grass between the house and the helicopter. My breath is knocked out. Glass rains down around me as the car's windows shatter.
Stay down!
Briggs shouts. He joins the feds at the back of the SUV and starts shooting in the direction of
the Mogs.
Behind me, agents break out the second-floor windows of Adam's old house and start firing. From my position, I can't tell where Luhan's at. 5 birds land on the ground around me. Their claws tremble, hinting at transformation. I look back at the porch and see Noto, bloods dripping from a burn mark on the shoulder of his suit. I point to him.
Protect the others,
I whisper loud enough for them to hear me. They cock their heads and stare back, blankly.
Go!
I shout. They scatter. Briggs looks back at me, reloading his rifle. He barks something into his walkie-talkie and then turns to me, shouting.
When I start shooting, you move! Get to the chopper!
I nod while gasping, trying to catch my breath. My bag is undulating on the ground beside me. I pat it, trying to tell Gamera that I'm all right. He could break out if he wanted to, I'm sure, but if we're about to take to the sky, I don't want to risk losing him. Above us, the skimmers have circled and are coming in for a pass. There's a loud banging sound from across the lawn as one of the craft goes up in flames. I follow the trail of smoke from the explosion down to the helicopter. That's when I realize it's a gunship, likely full of all sorts of weaponry.
Go!
Briggs shouts, opening fire again. I sprint, focusing in on the chopper and ignoring everything else around me. For someone who spent the majority of the last decade in an induced coma, muscles atrophying and disintegrating, I make a hell of a good run for it. Ashwood is a blur, but I'm aware of gunfire all around me and can hear the sizzle and electric pulse of the Mogadorian blasters firing. There's another bang from the chopper. In my peripheral vision, I see the Mog Humvee go up in flames. It turns out Luhan is already in the helicopter, firing from what I think is a grenade launcher.
He pulls me inside when I get there, half pushing me towards a seat in the back. I buckle in, wedging my bag between my feet, trying to weigh the pros and cons of unleashing Gamera now. The problem is that I don't know these men or where I'm even going. With all the pain and suffering that's happened because of my actions in the past, I couldn't stand the thought of Gamera or any of the Chimerae ending up dissected on a lab table in some government research facility in the name of science. Luhan yells into a walkie-talkie.
Azved on board! We're taking off in 5 seconds, whether you're here or not!
It's a command not only for Briggs, but for the pilot, who nods. There's a second soldier in the cockpit in addition to the pilot. I assume he's the one targeting with the gunship's main weapons. Another soldier is adjusting the mount on a huge machine gun pointing out the side of the chopper opposite where I entered. His eyes are on the sky, focused on the incoming skimmers, firing away. Briggs practically throws himself into the chopper a few seconds later. He shouts when he lands, then scrambles to his knees. One of his boots is covered in blood, and his left arm dangles limply at his side.
"Get us the hell out of here!"
Luhan barks at the pilot. He turns to the man on the gun.
"Mark your targets!"
As the chopper shudders and begins to shoot up, I attempt to help Briggs into the seat beside me, asking if he's okay, but he shakes me off, gritting his teeth as he buckles in. I lean forward, trying to get a glimpse of the incoming ships. Three skimmers open fire at once. Our chopper veers to one side, throwing us all about as we narrowly evade being hit. Carnage rains down on Ashwood, and we're caught in the crossfire. I brace myself and resist the urge to vomit. This is the first time I've been in a helicopter, at least that I'm aware of.
"Knock those bastards out of the sky!"
Luhan shouts. Machine gun fire fills the air, followed by the acrid, metallic smell of discharged rounds. A bigger weapon fires from somewhere near the front of the craft. I clench my jaw and grip the straps holding me in so hard I think I might be drawing blood. Shockwaves from an explosion somewhere outside rock the helicopter. A skimmer goes down in flames.
"Damn," Briggs says. "One of those Bureau bastards must have been packing a stinger."
We fly forward. One skimmer circles Ashwood, but the other is in fast pursuit of us, darting and flying zigzag loops to avoid the shots still being fired from our helicopter.
"Whatever you found in that base,"
Luhan says, shouting over the noise,
"they must not want it to get out."
What did we miss? Or what are we overlooking? "I haven't found anything," I say.
"Yeah, but they probably don't know that."
"Could be they're just pissed off aliens," Briggs mutters. As he speaks, he awkwardly tries to pull up his blood-soaked left pant leg with his right arm.
"Let me help,"
I offer. He takes a few deep breaths, sweat beading on his forehead, before leaning back into his seat. I take that as an okay and manage to get his pant leg pulled out of his boot and up over a hole that's been shot clean through his calf. He points to a med kit attached to the inner hull, and then talks me through cleaning and covering the wound with a compression bandage.
"Caught me mid-sprint,"
he says between instructions, and long strings of profanity.
"Came down hard on my shoulder. Think I knocked it out of the socket."
"I can try to put it back in if you want."
"Are you a doctor?"
"Technically," I say, "I'm an astronomer." Briggs just stares back at me, wheels turning in his head as he thinks about how to respond. But he doesn't get a chance to. One of the skimmer shots hits us, and we take a sudden dip, dropping what must be hundreds of feet in the air in the course of seconds. I'm sure we're going to crash, but the pilot levels us out.
"Damn it!"
I hear Luhan shout as he picks the gunner up off the floor and helps him back to his post.
"We can't outrun this thing!"
the pilot shouts. As Luhan confers with the other soldiers, I strain to look out the window. That's
when I see it. The Mogadorian warship hovering over Washington, D.C.
Impossible,
I murmur, knowing full well it's not, that it's real. But seeing the giant ship in person is something I'm not prepared for, even after all the TV coverage. It's awe-inspiring in the worst possible way. Below us, the city seems eerily quiet, at least from what I can tell. No smoke rising from the buildings. No jets flanking the alien monstrosity, blocking the twilight sky from our nation's capital. Where's the rest of the army? I ask. The National Guard, where are our defenses? Emphasis was put on the evacuation of high-value assets, Briggs says. Most of our targets were in the city. You're one of the few we had to secure by air. Otherwise, we're under orders to stay grounded. The chopper's going to drop us near our destination. It'll serve as a distraction if we need cover, while we make the rest of the way on foot. I don't think we're getting dropped anywhere if we can't shake this skimmer. Briggs looks at me, confused.
That's what we've been calling those smaller Moog ships,
I say. He considers this. Beats UFOs, I guess. The chopper shakes again. Luhan's yelling at the two men in the cockpit, something about avoiding collateral damage. Briggs starts shaking his head. All right, he says, leaning his hurt shoulder towards me and looking in the opposite direction.
Do it. Fix my arm.
You're sure? I ask. If we land in a hot zone, I don't want to be limping and unable to aim. Just get it over with. While I'm aware of how this should work physically, I've never actually put someone's shoulder back into its socket. Briggs closes his eyes as I take my seatbelt off, angling my body as best I can to get some leverage.
I'm going to count to three,
I say, grabbing his arm. One.
Hold on!
Luhan shouts back to us.
We're going to try something! And this is going to get bumpy!
The helicopter veers, throwing me into Briggs. There's a pop when I hit him.
Shit!
He shouts. I think I've accidentally reset his shoulder. It takes a few seconds to understand what the pilot's doing. Pulling back and slowing down has put the skimmer right beside us, in the perfect line of fire for our machine gun. Bullets rip through its hull, shredding the alien ship.
Wahoo!
The gunner shouts. The alien ship's cockpit goes up in flames, smoke trailing out of it. Briggs lets out a long breath.
That's one way to lose a tail.
Well, I'll be damned, Luhan says. You got the piece of shit. Looks like...
He stops as we watch the skimmer veer to the side, heading right for us.
Its pilot is making one final attempt to destroy his target.
Our chopper shoots forward, but not in time. The skimmer hits the back of our craft, our tail rotor snapping, and then we're spiraling down towards the grass below, a plummeting wreckage of glass and metal and screams. Chapter 5. I'm awoken by a slap to the face. My eyes shoot open. But the world is fuzzy and full of smoke, nothing but blurry shapes and disorienting darkness. For a few seconds, I'm afraid I'm back inside the Moog containment pod, and that everything that's happened in the last few months, my escape, reuniting with Sam, was nothing more than one long dream in an induced coma. Someone is shouting, but I can't figure out what he's saying, the sound distorted in my head. I feel myself falling forward, and then before I can make sense of what's happening, someone's pulling me, dragging me. Another slap to the face. This definitely isn't Anu or Zakos. They both preferred needles and blades over getting their hands dirty with human subjects. Slowly, everything comes into focus, and I start to remember what's going on. I prop myself up on my hands and knees in a soft patch of grass, coughing, trying to catch my breath. My lungs feel like they're full of smoke and fire. The first things I see are the helicopter and skimmer, scorched mangles of twisted metal 100 yards away. Luhan and Briggs stand over me, the latter leaning against a tree, taking as much weight off his injured leg as he can. Both their faces are smudged with something dark. The edge of the warship is overhead, blotting out the sky. As I continue to gasp for air, my head spins. Getting to my feet is a wobbly process, Luhan stepping in to keep me from falling over. Finally, though, I feel grounded enough to assess our surroundings. That's when I see it, lit up in front of us and blazing against what is now almost full-on night. I start, but I can't finish the thought. I'm too overwhelmed by the realization of where we are, of what's happened.
The Washington Monument, Luhan says. We're lucky we went down here. Otherwise, we might have had civilian casualties. We're not far from our destination.
The fact that crash landing in the middle of half a dozen national landmarks is considered a good thing is probably more telling about the current state of the world than it should be.
The others?
I ask, remembering the men on board.
They didn't make it,
Briggs says. There's something else nagging in the back of my mind, but my thoughts are a jumble. Blood drips down my face from my left temple. I must have hit my head in the crash, as if I didn't have enough brain damage already.
We need to move, Luhan says. Now! There are hostiles patrolling the city, and there's no way they missed our crash.
That's when it hits me. My bag! I shout as I rush towards the wreckage. Gamera's inside. What happened to him?
You can't!
Briggs starts, but I ignore him. As far as we know, there are only a handful of Chimerae in existence now, and I won't let one of them, my bodyguard, be burned alive. Luhan intercepts me, grabbing the back of my shirt with a firm grip and spinning me around before I can charge head first into the clearing.
Listen, good, he snarls. Briggs risked his life pulling you out of there, and I'll be damned if I let you die of smoke inhalation, or an explosion, or get captured while trying to rescue your luggage. Our mission is to get you to the bunker, and that's what we're going to do, come hell or high water.
You don't understand.
I begin. But then I hear a familiar screech in the air, the sound of a bird crying out. A big hawk is perched on a tree limb overhead, staring at me. It stretches its wings out as if to signal me. I shake my head a little. Relieved. Obviously, I've underestimated how resilient these animals are. Luhan stares at me like I'm an idiot, and then pulls me back towards Briggs.
With any luck, we can make it the rest of the way without raising any alarms, Luhan says.
I wouldn't exactly say luck has been on our side tonight,
Briggs mutters.
Where are we going?
I ask.
Union Station.
Luhan takes his sidearm out and checks to make sure that it's loaded.
There's transport there that'll take us to a secure location.
The trains are still running?
No train the public knows about.
My mouth falls open a little. I remember reading conspiracy theories about secret tunnels that led to and from places like the White House and the Capitol, all connecting through D.C.'s Union Station. I didn't realize they actually existed. I guess I shouldn't really be surprised. Briggs steps forward with wide eyes.
Sir,
he whispers, while taking the assault rifle from across his back. I turn and find another skimmer approaching the wreckage a few miles off.
Move!
Luhan says, pointing in the opposite direction. If they're smart, they'll be looking for survivors. He leads us through the National Mall, keeping to the trees lining the side instead of the open middle area. They offer a little overhead coverage, but aren't dense enough to hide us completely if the Moogs bring in a skimmer with a spotlight on it. At least the foliage makes a great pathway for Gamera, who jumps from limb to limb as a bushy-tailed squirrel. It's a small miracle that we have at least some cover of darkness, but there's enough ambient light around that we're not exactly invisible. The U.S. Capitol stands less than a mile ahead of us, its white facade gleaming in the darkness. It's eerily quiet, especially for where we are. I'd feared the cities would be overrun with frantic people and military, or worse, squadrons of Mogadorians.
Where is everyone?
I whisper as we pass a series of museums.
Isn't this place usually filled with tourists? What happened to all of them?
Why wasn't there immediately some kind of response team when we almost crashed into the Washington Monument?
This area was a priority evacuation zone, Lujan explains. Blocks surrounding the White House and the Capitol have been cleared. After the resistance in New York turned into widespread destruction, the official military stance became to neither engage the Mogadorians nor interfere with the patrols they sent down from their warships. People are being dragged from their homes in Manhattan. We're trying to keep that from happening here, too.
I swallow hard at the mention of New York and tap my pocket to make sure my satellite phone is still there. Is Sam safe? And what's the unofficial stance? I ask.
What does it look like? We're covertly pulling our assets and readying countermeasures. Why do you think you're here?
We're almost to the Capitol when Briggs starts to fall behind. There's blood leaking from the bandage around his leg.
Shit,
Lujan says when he notices.
How bad is it?
Go on without me.
Briggs leans against a tree. He's sweating profusely now, his adrenaline probably beginning to wear off.
I'll be fine here.
Any of 'em come across me?
I won't engage.
Lujan stares him down for a few seconds, and then nods.
We can't just leave him here,
I protest.
Our mission is to get you to the bunker, safely.
Lujan says for what feels like the 10th time since I met him. He's already starting to jog away.
Well, I'm not going without him.
The colonel turns to me, sneering a bit.
At this point, that's not your decision.
I look back and forth between the two of them, but neither seems like he's going to budge on this. So I keep talking.
You don't know the enemy like I do. That's the whole reason the president wants me, right? If we leave Briggs here and the Moogs find him, what do you think will happen? A wounded, lone soldier near the wreckage of one of their ships? Best case scenario, they kill him immediately. More likely, they'll take him prisoner. I'm guessing he knows where we're going. You'd be leading them straight to the president.
I won't talk,
Briggs says.
You think that matters?
I ask, raising two fingers to the side of my head where the Moogs used to attach electrodes.
They'll rip everything you know out of your mind. They have technology you've never dreamed of. You'll tell them every secret you know, and only then will they start to really hurt you.
Lujan grits his teeth. For a second, I worry that I've actually doomed Briggs to an early death, and I mentally start readying arguments against putting the man down. Eventually, Lujan points a thick finger in my face.
Don't move. I'm going to scout ahead.
He glances at Briggs.
When I get back, be prepared to run.
Then he's gone. Briggs stares at the ground, seething. He looks angry, but I'm not sure if it's at the Moogs, me, or himself. Likely a combination of all three.
You should just leave me behind,
he finally mutters. You pulled me out of the wreckage, right? I ask.
I was doing my job.
Well, now we're even. He gets quiet and keeps his eyes on the grass. I take my satellite phone out and make sure I haven't missed a call from Sam and that it's still intact after the crash. Then I pat my pockets to see if I have anything else useful that I've forgotten about.
Lose something?
Briggs asks.
The Mogadorian blaster. In the crash.
I'd stashed one in my bag. He shrugs and pulls a pistol from a holster on his back.
Know how to use one of these?
He asks. I'm better with a sniper rifle, but I think I can manage. He lets out a single laugh and hands over the weapon. It's got Beretta engraved across the side.
It's not an alien gun, he says, but it'll get the job done.
Briggs has some extra gauze in his pocket, and I talk him into letting me rebandage his leg. He needs some kind of real medical attention, but right now, I'm all he's got. I'm just finishing up when Luhan returns.
"We're pretty clear up ahead," he says. "I saw one Moog patrol booking it towards the crash site. They must have been called in to search for survivors. Hopefully the bastards aren't very good at tracking."
He notes the pistol in my hand.
"Don't fire that thing unless you have to. Stealth is our greatest advantage right now."
There's a noise above. Gamera's bouncing on one of the branches, chittering in strange rodent squeaks, and looking back and forth between me and the rows of trees we've already walked through.
"Let's get—"
Luhan starts. But whatever he says after that is drowned out by the bellowing roar coming from the trees behind us. Chapter 6. Some kind of animal moves out of the shadows. No, more like a demon. Even in the relative darkness, I can make out its grotesque face. There's something bat-like about its features. Black eyes sit above what looks like a row of 4 or 5 quivering nostrils. Perhaps the creature found us by scent? Its jaws open so wide that they look unhinged, showing off rows of jagged teeth that drip thick saliva onto the grass below. Its arms and legs are too long and muscular to be mistaken for an animal of Earth, each elbow or joint capped with a jagged horn. In the dim light, I can't tell if its slick-looking body is gray or dark blue.
"What the fuck is that?"
Luhan asks.
"A Mogadorian monster,"
I think, remembering Sam and Adam and the others talking about such creatures. But I don't have time to explain. The beast roars again, and then charges on all fours, propelled by its oversized limbs. I raise my gun and pull the trigger. There's only a click, no bullet.
"Take the goddamn safety off!"
Briggs shouts as he opens fire. Luhan joins him, shooting a giant revolver that looks like it could take down an elephant. The creature seems unfazed, or possibly just isn't hit by any of the shots. Whatever the case, it bats me out of the way with one massive arm as it flies by, sending me rolling into the trunk of a nearby tree. Briggs manages to outmaneuver it, dodging its next swipe and hustling backwards. A barrage of bullets from his assault rifle shreds one of the creature's legs. It hits the ground hard. I hear someone barking a command behind me in a language that causes every muscle in my body to tense.
There are a dozen Moogs, maybe more,
darting towards us through the trees, trying to catch up to the beast. Several in front are already aiming our way.
"Moogs, take cover!"
I shout, scrambling to my feet. Briggs ducks behind another tree near me as blaster fire sends smoking bits of bark falling all around us. I get the safety off my pistol, and we fire into the approaching squad. A few of the Moogs disintegrate. Behind me, and several yards to my left, Luhan fires in a steady rhythm, Moogs turning to dust after every shot. His gun thunders like a cannon each time he pulls the trigger. At some point, the monster must have disappeared. I don't see it anywhere, or maybe it's turned to dust, destroyed by Luhan. "I'm out," I say as my weapon starts clicking with an empty chamber. Briggs tosses me a clip, and I fumble to reload. That's when a roar sounds over my shoulder, and I turn just in time to see the creature leap out of the trees, using its remaining muscular leg to send itself flying straight for me. I'm too slow and can't get my handgun loaded and turned in time. The monster holds one of its elbows in the air, ready to plunge the spiked joint into me. I whistle. It's a reflex. In my panic, I'd forgotten all about my bodyguard, but some primal part of my consciousness must realize that whistling is the only thing that will save me now. Gamera descends in a split second, obviously having been waiting in the trees for his moment to strike, moving so fast that I wonder if he was already in the air when I whistled. He takes the form of a panther,
intercepting the Moog beast in midair,
gnashing sharp teeth around its one good leg.
"What the hell is going on?"
Luhan shouts, aiming his gun at the animals fighting tooth and nail in front of him.
"Don't! The cat's with me!"
He looks at me in confusion. That's when a blaster shot hits him in the stomach. He groans, clutching his gut as his knees hit the ground.
"Shit!"
Briggs shouts. He starts forward, but there's a tangle of beasts between us and Luhan, not to mention half a dozen Moogs still firing at anything that moves.
"Gamera!"
I don't know how much the Chimerae understand anyone who's not a guard, but the panther looks my way, ripping off the monster's good leg as he does so. I point towards where the blaster fire is coming from in the trees.
"Attack!"
He must understand some of that, because suddenly he's a bird shooting overhead. Moments later I hear a roar, followed by the sound of a Mogadorian scream. It only lasts for a few seconds before going silent. I take a few steps forward, sticking to the trees for cover. When I'm close to the Moog beast, it roars at me, struggling to get up using only its arms. I raise my pistol and fire over and over again. Each bullet finds a home in the bastard's head. Dark, viscous mucus spurts onto the trees and grass behind it. After a few seconds, my pistol starts to click again. The monster falls to the grass, lifeless. Then it slowly starts to dissolve, until it's nothing but a pile of ash. Despite being in a shootout with invaders who've come to take my planet, I can't help but feel exhilaration every time one of them turns to dust. Maybe I'm not so useless after all.
"Damn it! I'm almost out of ammo,"
Briggs says. That's when I realize all the blaster fire has stopped. Gamera darts out of the trees, back in the form of a black panther, his gleaming coat covered in ash.
"Holy Jesus!"
Briggs keeps repeating.
"What's happening?"
I don't get to answer. Luhan's groaning in front of me, clutching his stomach. There's smoke rising from holes in his chest. He must have been hit a few times when we weren't looking. There's blood everywhere. I kneel beside him, but it's too late. He points in the direction of Union Station, and then his breathing stops. All I can do is close his eyes and mutter an apology that he got dragged into this, telling myself that he'll be the last casualty of this war, even though, of course, I know that's not true.
"He's..."
Briggs says. I nod my head.
"This thing..."
He aims his rifle at Gamera, who stalks the trees around me, sniffing the air.
This animal, it's an alien too?"
"That animal is on our side. He just saved our lives." Briggs steps across from me, not taking his eyes off Gamera until he's standing over Luhan. There's a flash of remorse on his face.
"We need to get to the station,"
he says quietly.
"That gunfire probably alerted every hostile within a half mile. They'll be here in no time."
"What do we do with his body?" I ask. Briggs just shakes his head.
"He'd want to make sure the mission was completed."
I understand where he's coming from, but the colonel lost his life trying to get me to the president. I can't just leave him here, out in the open. So I drag Luhan to the dense thicket of bushes nearby, and try to hide him as best I can. It's all I can think of. I tell myself that when we get to wherever we're going, I might be able to send someone to get his body, but in the back of my mind, I know that there are much more important things to worry about. I don't realize how shaky my hands are until I put him down. Despite all the fighting I've been a part of, I am still not used to death. But then, no one should be. Briggs crouches beside me, collecting Luhan's gun and ammo. When he's done, he nods to me, and then we're moving again. Briggs has to be in excruciating pain with every other step, but he doesn't say a word or even slow his pace. I follow behind him, wondering how the hell things got this bad. And about my son. Is Sam safe? And I can't help but think of the others as well. Adam and the rest of the guard, Sarah, even Noto and the agents who were left behind at Ashwood. What's become of them? What's going to become of all of us? Chapter 7. We keep moving without much incident, though the journey is a bit of a blur to me. The shock of everything that's going on, coupled with my lack of sleep, has me running on nothing but adrenaline. A squadron of Moogs races by us in Humvees at one point, but Briggs and I stick to the parks and trees and somehow manage to avoid detection. Questions fill my mind. Who's supplying the Moogs with transportation? What are they doing now that they have seemingly free rein to move about the city? I call Sam along the way but get no answer. I try my best not to think about what that means, but worry for his safety continues to beat through my mind. Eventually, Briggs and I arrive at Union Station, a giant structure full of shops, restaurants, and rail lines. We avoid the main entrance. Briggs ushers me through a side door and pulls an earpiece out of his pocket as we stand in an empty, narrow hallway.
Major Briggs reporting in.
His voice is a whisper.
I've got the asset. Do you have a visual?
He points to a camera mounted on the wall. Someone must respond.
Negative, he says. It's just the two of us.
He turns to me.
All rails and buses are suspended. The place should be evacuated, but I'm guessing there might still be hostiles patrolling inside. Our route won't take us anywhere near the main lobbies, though.
Who are you? I start. But Briggs puts a finger to his lips and shakes his head twice. Somewhere down the corridor,
I can hear the faint echo of Mogadorian voices. They're inside.
Briggs limps through a connecting hallway and eventually to a series of twisting staircases, hesitating only a few times to figure out where to go next, holding a finger to his earpiece and, I assume, listening to directions. I'm not sure if our path is chosen to avoid Mogadorians, or if it's just necessarily convoluted. He communicates only in hand signals, eyes constantly searching for signs of movement as we dart through the maze of behind-the-scenes hallways and rooms most people never see. Gamera follows, buzzing along as an insect, ready to shift at a moment's notice. Finally, we come to a room that looks like some kind of suite, though based on the furniture and the avocado-colored carpet, it looks like it hasn't been redecorated since I was a kid. Briggs finds a touchscreen keypad on the wall behind a small painting of the White House. It's the only thing that looks new in the room. He enters some code and lowers his head to stare into the pad, which must have some sort of retina sensor. The wall beside him shifts, and a series of thick steel slabs slide away, revealing a small room with a grated metal floor. He waves me through, finally letting out a long breath as the wall slides back into place behind us. Then he flips a switch, and the floor starts to move. We're on an elevator.
Thank God,
he says, leaning against the wall, finally grimacing and acting like a man who's been injured.
This is insane,
I whisper. I can't figure out how many flights of stairs we've gone down, but it seems like we're definitely farther underground than any normal train station would be.
There have been hidden tunnels and safe rooms in this building since the Truman administration. When the Cold War really started to escalate, all sorts of secret entrances and exits were added, and, well, let's just say the architects got creative.
We finally come to a stop at a small landing. There's one door that has a sign that says, Employees Only, on it.
That should be an unused janitor's closet,
he says, pointing at the door.
Which means,
he heads to a blank wall, and starts pressing on bricks at random, muttering to himself. Finally, one of them pushes in, and a portion of the wall slides away. He turns to me and grins.
What did I say? You'd be surprised what kinds of gonzo shit the government designed in the 60s and 70s. It's like they were taking their cues from James Bond movies.
The panel closes behind us as we step into what looks like a museum of old train cars. 10 or so of them parked side by side in a tight row in front of us.
What is this place?
I whisper to myself as I look around. There seems to be no other entrance or exit.
Union Station's top secret transport hub.
He waves at one of the cameras on the wall, and then limps forward.
Good. Looks like they sent back our car. We won't have to wait for it.
How do you know all this? I ask. Even if he is a major, this seems like it should be far above his pay grade.
There's a small team of soldiers stationed out of a secret base here in the city. Our primary concern is the safe evacuation of assets and high-profile targets in the event of an emergency.
He keys in a code on the side of one of the trains, and a door opens. The inside is roughly as big as a single subway car, but furnished like a private jet, all plush and leather.
Incredible,
I murmur, as Gamera lands on a bench and takes the form of a snapping turtle.
You haven't seen anything. Watch this.
Briggs walks to the front of the car and flips a series of switches. The train shakes, and suddenly we're sinking into the cement until the entire car is several yards below the floor. A set of lights goes on, and I can see a track disappearing into a dark tunnel ahead of us.
We'll be there in an hour. Why don't you get some sleep if you can?
The train car starts to shoot forward, taking me off balance a little. I catch myself on the side of a seat before sinking into it. It's as if, just by sitting down, my body gives up, ready to pass out. While Briggs busies himself at the front of the car, I pull out my satellite phone. Whatever Adam did to it must have worked because I get a signal. But Sam doesn't answer.
Please be safe, wherever you are.
Before I can start worrying or hypothesizing what my son might be doing, a dark, dreamless sleep settles on me, and the rest of the world fades away to nothing. Chapter 8
Malcolm!
I shoot up in my seat as I wake to the sound of my name gasping back into consciousness.
Finally!
Briggs says.
I've been yelling at you for a full minute. I thought I was going to have to slap you again.
He's on the bench across from me, injured leg outstretched. The bandage is starting to ooze blood around the edges. My eyes scan the train car until I find Gamera still in turtle form, snoring on the floor by my feet.
Where are we?
I ask.
Almost to the bunker. I figured you'd want a few minutes to wake up.
I nod, rubbing my eyes. They sting, and I realize I'm probably on the way to being dehydrated if I'm not already. I look at my phone. Still nothing. I've slept less than an hour.
We're still underground?
This whole system is underground,
Briggs says.
It's a secret. Remember?
Fascinating. I say, still trying to wrap my head around things. Since being freed from the Moogs, waking up has been a process of slowly remembering where I am and what I'm doing, especially if I find myself in a strange place.
I have so many questions I don't know where to begin.
You've got questions?
He points to Gamera.
That's a shape-shifting alien pet. This is the craziest shit I've ever seen.
Well, maybe it would have been a week ago. Before everything else.
Gamera stares at his finger curiously.
Looks like he's hungry,
Briggs says.
He won't bite,
I say.
At least I don't think he will. His name's Gamera,
That was my idea. He always seemed fond of my son. Briggs mutters something I can't make out. When we get to wherever we're going, I'd appreciate you not mentioning him to the others. It's not that I don't trust whoever's there. It's just that I'm afraid.
Don't worry,
he says.
You're right to be cautious. Everyone's on edge. We're all still trying to figure out who's in bed with the Mogadorians and who's not. It's a select group being collected at the bunker, though. Still. I mean, aliens are real, so I don't know what to expect anymore.
I have to focus. Names float through my mind, the men and women we know of who are Moog Pro agents. Will the Vice President be at the bunker? I ask. He's the highest official I can think of who's sold his soul to the Mogadorians.
No. From what I understand, he's AWOL. Disappeared along with his entire security detail right after everything happened at the UN. They may have tracked him down by now, but it's standard procedure to keep the President and VP in different locations in a situation like this. You know, so they don't get taken out at the same time if something goes wrong.
Ah, I say. That's good.
You don't think.
He doesn't finish the question. Just lets it linger in the air. It's obvious what's on his mind, though.
The feds think he's working with the Moogs.
This was one of the first things Walker told us when she showed up at Ashwood. Was that really just yesterday?
Jesus.
Briggs shifts his focus and looks me straight in the eyes. His gaze is piercing.
Just, Jesus, do we even stand a chance?
He asks. I have to believe we do, I say. Briggs seems comforted by this. The muscles in his face relax a little.
I won't mention Gamera, he says.
You know, you never told me your name.
Major Briggs.
I meant your first name.
Oh,
he shrugs.
Yeah. You get used to everyone using your last name, I guess. It's Samuel.
Sam. Of course it is. I smile, even as my worry for Sam pounds against the inside of my chest. That's my son's name.
He wasn't back at Ashwood, was he?
No. He'd left already. Headed to New York to try and stop the Mogadorians. He's been fighting against them for months now, trying to keep all this from happening. Working alongside the guard. The good aliens. Briggs nods but doesn't say anything for a minute or two. When he does talk, his voice has a softer tone to it than I've heard since he showed up to whisk me off to a secret bunker.
My mom's the only one I have left. She lives in the Bronx, but she works in the city. I haven't been able to reach her.
There's a spark of something painful on his face, and then it's gone. He's back to the stony expression that seems to be his natural state. I hold out my phone.
Here,
I say.
No signal underground.
I've got one. He looks at me curiously and then takes the phone.
How is that possible?
He asks. It's a long story. I watch him dial, carefully, his fingers hesitating over each button. He holds the phone up to his ear for a long time before finally handing it back to me, shaking his head.
I'm sure she's all right,
I say, knowing full well what a useless assurance this is. The train starts to slow. Briggs gets to his feet.
She's a tough old broad.
I'm sure she's fine. Say, can I get my gun back? They're kind of particular about who has weapons down here. I hand the pistol over. He limps a bit as he positions himself in front of the car's sliding door. The brakes screech. And we come to a final stop. He stretches, gritting his teeth as he puts weight on his injured leg.
I hope they've got a solid med staff here. And hot water.
Gamera shrinks down to an insect again and hops on my shoulder as I stand beside Briggs.
And coffee,
I say. Wait, is this your first time here?
In person, yeah. But I know the schematics like the back of my hand, so I pretty much know what to expect.
The door slides open, and the first thing I see are five guys in dark suits all pointing machine guns at my face. Briggs doesn't flinch at the sight of the weapons. I, on the other hand, jump and raise my hands in the air.
Major Samuel Briggs.
A man in black says as he steps forward. Briggs nods. The man holds some kind of small electronic device up to Briggs's eyes, and then has him place his fingers on an electronic tablet. He must pass whatever this test is, because the man motions for Briggs to come out of the train car.
This is the asset, Malcolm Good,
Briggs says, as he steps between the men. None of them turns his gun off me.
He's cleared. I've disarmed him.
Despite this, one of the suited men steps forward and pats me down. He holds my satellite phone out to the guy who seems to be in charge, but he just shakes his head.
Won't do him any good so far underground and with all our shielding, he says,
and my heart sinks. He continues, and I reach out, obliged to follow any orders at this point, and he guides my palm to the tablet. An old picture of me pops up on the screen, one I know they used in missing posters when I disappeared, along with some sort of record full of my information. The man pulls the tablet away before I can actually read anything.
Welcome to Liberty Base, he says. I'm Deputy Chief Richards with the Secret Service. Follow me.
Wait. How do you have my fingerprints? I ask, pocketing the phone the other man gives back to me and silently thanking the entire universe that the guy didn't check for a signal on it.
What information just got pulled up?
The man lets out a short laugh and doesn't bother to answer the questions. Instead, he turns away and starts walking towards a door on the other end of the room, which is nothing but a big concrete box. It's only then that I notice a man in a lab coat hovering over a control panel in one corner.
Keep the train here, Richards says to him as we pass by. This is the last of our guests from Union Station.
He leads us into a narrow hallway. The walls and floors are all slate gray. Our footsteps echo through the corridor. Briggs, following behind me, with the gunmen bringing up the rear.
You're injured, Major,
Richards says without looking back. I wonder if he noticed the bandage earlier, or if he can just tell from the uneven sound of Briggs's footsteps.
We'll wake the medical staff.
Where are we? I ask.
You're at a secret underground bunker. That's all I'm at liberty to tell you right now.
He turns. Another hallway. How much time have I spent navigating underground labyrinths in the last few days? This Liberty Base is beginning to remind me of the sub-level of Ashwood, and it's not exactly a comforting feeling.
I was told the President sent for me. When will I be meeting with him? There's a lot to discuss about the Mogadorians and who in the government. It's almost 4 in the morning. Everyone's taking a 2-hour break before regrouping. When you're needed, someone will collect you.
He stops in front of a door and swings it open. Inside is a small room with a desk and a bed covered in a blanket. A mini-fridge and cabinet sit between 2 slim doors. It's slightly nicer than I'd expect a dorm room or cheap motel to be.
You'll find fresh clothes in the closet and toiletries in the bathroom. There's some food and water as well.
You brought me all the way here to put me in a room and I start.
You'll have to forgive us for not having a gift basket and suite waiting for you, but we're in a state of emergency, Dr. Good. I advise you to stay in here until you're called for. Don't roam about the halls. I'll keep a man posted outside your door, in case you need anything.
Wait, I say, suddenly feeling like more of a prisoner than someone here to help the President. You won't tell me where I am and I'm not supposed to leave my room. What's going on here? Richards gets a slight smirk on his face.
If you want to leave, Doctor, you can. I'll just have a few of my men escort you to the surface and see to it that you aren't able to find this place ever again.
I glance at Briggs, who nods to me in a way I think is supposed to be reassuring. Then I sigh and walk into the room.
Someone will send for you later. Richards continues. Get some sleep. It's going to be a long day.
Then the door is shut, and I'm left alone. I half expect him to lock me in before leaving, but he doesn't. At least, not that I hear. I wash my face in the tiny bathroom once I realize that the combination of grime and several days' worth of stubble have me looking like a vagrant. It's only when the water in the sink turns pink that I realize I've got splotches of blood on my hands. From bandaging Briggs or checking on Luhan. Maybe it's even my own. There's a cut on the side of my head and dried blood in my hair. I take out my phone. Whatever Adam did to it, he's a genius. I'm getting a signal, despite what Richards said. I'm about to walk back into the main room and dial my son when I stop, glancing around. Given how secretive everyone's being, I'm sure I'm not supposed to have contact with the outside world, and this place is probably bugged. I can't lose my phone, so I stay in the bathroom, closing the door and turning on the faucet and shower, trying to hide my voice as much as I can. I try, Sam, but there's no answer. Again. I beat my fist against the sink, causing the mirror in front of me to shake. I dial another number. This time, someone picks up.
Hello?
It's Malcolm, I say. Hope I didn't wake you.
I don't sleep much.
Noto says, glad to hear you made it out of that mess.
Likewise.
We have a few injured men, but they'll live. It'll take more than the small scouting party they sent to wipe us out, but the Moogs will be back. Probably, I say. Though I'm not sure Ashwood is high on their priority list right now.
Doesn't matter. We're packing up everything we can from the archives and heading to a safe house. Orders from high up. The brass thinks Ashwood is too hot right now.
I have to say, I agree. He pauses. When he starts talking again, he's a little quieter.
We haven't heard from Walker, but now that the Moogs know we're here, we can't sit around waiting for another attack. Don't worry. We're, trying to take the guard birds with us. Where are you? Are you safe?
I glance around at the sterile bathroom walls. Steam from the shower is starting to fill the room. I'm suddenly feeling claustrophobic.
You know, I say quietly, I have no idea.